Hello and welcome to Sustainability is Sexy, the podcast where we talk about all things sustainable, from regenerative agriculture, alternative to single-use plastic, and everything in between. I'm your host, Liz Murphy, and each episode I will talk to leaders in the sustainability space to provide insights, innovation, and inspiration for all of us to create a healthier planet. So today I'm joined by Nita Kermans-Gilson, co-executive director and co-founder of Produce Good, which is a local nonprofit reducing waste and hunger while building community. Welcome to the podcast, Nita.
Thank you. It's so great to be here, Liz.
I'm so excited to have you on. We've known each other for a little while now.
Yeah. I know of each other too.
You're exactly.
Like a reputation.
As do you, which is the amazing part of this community, is I feel like I'm always hearing about people and their work, and then I get to meet them, and it's just this incredible feeling. So we've collaborated on events. We've definitely kind of, I feel like, overlapped mm-hmm. on different parts of the community, which I just love always seeing.
Right.
So I'm super excited to talk to you today to learn more about yourself and more about Produce Good. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So I usually like to get started by asking my guest a little bit about their background. I think it gives us some insight into what inspired you to start and create the organization. So just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I will tell you, so I've got two, now they're grown daughters, but I think the genesis of Produce Good, your listeners might relate, I'm not sure, but when my eldest daughter was 14-ish, it was quite a while ago, she was reading lots of books about the environment, and she was getting very depressed and just mm-hmm. saying, "Mom, you know what? There's nothing we can do. It's like, look at what's happening. We're totally ruining the planet, and there's no hope." And I could not accept that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I cannot let this 14-year-old already be hopeless. I just could not accept it. I said, "You know, honey, I know that there are so many problems, but, you know, we all can do like one thing." And I said, it's better than doing nothing. And mm-hmm. what ended up happening is I had been already interested, you know, just in my immediate neighborhood in Carlsbad. So in 2009,
yeah.
I started to just, you know, walk my neighborhood and think, okay, all these people just have a fruit tree in their yard and it's on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Someone should be doing something about it. And I couldn't find anyone that was doing anything about it. So I just started to do the most basic little grassroots thing. You know, mm-hmm. my friends and I would get boxes from Bonds on Friday night. We'd go to pick each other's yards or someone else's yard or somewhere, and then we'd take that to the food bank. It was like super simple, basically. That's the basis of Produce Good.
Yeah.
It's a little bigger now. But and I know that when I was doing that, I kept thinking, you know, this is the thing that I can do. And it helped me to not get completely depressed, not going from disbelief to despair because the problems are so big and so mm-hmm. overwhelming. And just to be focused on doing this one thing and this one thing I could do really is how it all started. And this is, again, with my daughter. And now I tease her a lot. I'm like, well, you know, you're the reason why this started. And, yeah. and it's been wonderful for her because I do think that she did, you know, see that it's possible. And that's really what I do tell people. It's like, you can, one person, I know it sounds so trite, but one person can do things.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm a one person who started doing this thing, as simple as it was, and it has turned into something quite big.
Yeah.
And pretty impactful.
That is really important for me to hear personally. And I think it's really important for our listeners to hear. And I think we've all struggled. Anyone that is focused on the climate crisis, we struggle, you know, and kind of waffle between that despair and inspiration.
Right.
And it can be very difficult with everything that's going on. And, you know, I always consider myself a little bit of like a Pollyanna, like always full of positivity, looking for the bright side and all these things. But even me, like, you know, I'll fall down a rabbit hole and just be like, wow, like, I'm not sure,
right.
you know, but I do know that on a personal level, I have to do everything that I can, just to keep myself sane.
Right. And it is, that's really a great way to look at it because it is, if you do sort of just sit back and look at the whole picture, you just become completely immobilized because mm-hmm. it's just too much. So just doing that one thing, the one thing, you know, picking the fruit,
yeah,
taking it, getting it not on the ground, you know, getting it off the ground or not letting it hit the ground and taking it to hungry people.
Exactly. And I think we, you know, especially people here in San Diego, but I'm sure anyone from anywhere has experienced that walking through their own neighborhood or through their own community and seeing somebody that has some sort of fruit tree or food, you know, whatever, and it's just falling to the ground and going to waste. And there are so many hungry people. So could you define gleaning for our listeners?
I can, as a matter of fact. A lot of people think we're saying cleaning. It's like, we're not a cleaning company. We're not going to clean house. But gleaning is basically the ancient practice that farmers, I mean, this is hundreds of years ago, would use. They would leave the four corners of their fields unpicked or picked, but left for the widows and orphans. And it was essentially an early form of social welfare. They would take care of those who couldn't take care of themselves, you know, and that is really the essence of gleaning. Mm-hmm. We at Produce Good have taken that concept, which is so perfect for San Diego because we literally have an almost year-round growing season, massive amounts of citrus, you know, just a beautiful climate. And we now just have brought that into the modern age. And we use that idea all the time of, you know, you're going from that source, that excess to the need and create access for, you know, those who cannot get to it. And San Diego happens to be such an incredible and unique place that there is a real combination of urban and ag. You know, it's not just like gigantic commercial, you know, not like Central California, you just have huge commercial operations, you know, agricultural stuff. Right. It's all mixed in. So that's why you probably either have a citrus tree or you know somebody that has one because it's just, they're everywhere.
Yeah. And I, one thing that's always struck me about your organization, from a perspective of kind of coming into it with not a lot of knowledge of the citrus groves in San Diego, not being from here originally, you know, I kind of was thinking to myself, okay, if somebody owns a large acreage of citrus, they're likely utilizing it, taking care of it, selling the produce, but that's clearly not the case because there's such a need for, you know, what Produce Good is doing. So can you give me a little bit of insight into maybe the reasons behind that and what you guys are seeing on more of a large scale level versus just like the neighborhood trees?
Absolutely. So, and again, I might have my dates a little bit off, but basically the kind of the turn of the last century, the early 1900s, you know, citrus, was very exotic. It was imported here, the seeds from, you know, the Middle East and from Europe. And it grows so beautifully in California because it is a Mediterranean climate. Mm-hmm. And it was such a popular sort of delicacy at that time that they just started planting it everywhere, like everywhere. So like Orange County, for example, is that's why they're called Orange County. Even though there aren't any orange groves left, unfortunately, but that's why they're named that. But the fact of San Diego, it's a little bit different because, as I said, there were citrus, you know, groves, but what ended up happening is they just started to sort of, you know, parcel them out. So people would buy land or buy a house that had citrus trees. Maybe they'd even have 100 citrus trees, but they really were not commercial, you know, people. They bought it because like, oh, this is so cool to have a bunch of orange trees until they actually start fruiting. And then they're calling, that's why they call us. And they're like, oh my gosh, we had no idea that there'd be so much fruit here. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is, Liz, is that, you know, because a lot of these trees are mature, I mean, they've been around for, you know, a lot of the groves are like way more than 50 to 60 years old. And these trees are incredible. And once they're established, they really do just keep producing. So anyone that has had any kind of a citrus tree knows that one tree, you know, you can get hundreds of pieces of fruit, if not thousands. And so you just multiply that by hundreds of thousands of trees, and you can kind of see the volume of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, with what you talked about, kind of the inspo part for you guys, like definitely want to encourage everyone that gleaning is something you can do on your own, right? That you can do in your own neighborhood. It's something that I've done, you know, for most of my life, whether it's with people's permission or not, right? Like just walking by and grabbing a few off the ground, but it's a great opportunity, like for families to kind of talk to their neighbors and see if they can help share the load of neighborhood citrus.
Exactly.
But with Produce Good from such a large, more commercial level, you know, you've now developed into this organization that is doing very wide scale gleaning. So tell us a little bit about what that looks like now. So where you started, but now what are you guys up to?
Well, I will say this. So we still do pick at people's houses that have mm-hmm. one or two trees in their yard. So I don't know how detailed you want me to get, but the overview of the idea is that, you know, if we are able to, you know, do that and have support from, let's say, a city or a group, we're happy to go pick mm-hmm. at, you know, Joe Smith's house that's got three trees. But what, especially when we were a younger organization, it just wasn't as efficient because it takes the same amount of time to go drive there to do that, to get people to, you know, to pick mm-hmm. than it would at three trees that it would, you know, at 50 trees. So we did partner with the food banks in the beginning, and it was fantastic because we leveraged their transportation and their storage. So what would happen is a grower would call us and say, hey, I've got this grove of 50 trees and they're ripe. We'd say, great. So we'd get some volunteers. We'd arrange a date. We'd call the food bank. They would bring as many of those totes, the big boxes, mm-hmm. as we requested. Mm-hmm. And then the volunteers would come. They'd pick their little hearts out. They'd fill the totes, and then the food bank would take it back. So that we had that model for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And that we still do. We still work with them. We have these big, we call them big picks. And we started them up again after COVID because we had to stop that all. But that is very popular. And like you said, people should be doing it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it does inspire people. Some people start their own neighborhood groups, which is exactly what we want. Like, yes. We want everyone to be doing it because there's so much out there. And it's such a wonderful exercise. It's like you're out in nature and it smells so good. I mean, mm-hmm. I wish I could do like smell-o-vision, yes. You know, like on the website, like you push a button and you smell like orange blossoms, because that's what it's like. You're just prancing around an orchard. You're picking fruit. I mean, a lot of times people are bringing their kids, and it really is a lot. It's a lot of teaching moments, and the realization not only of how much is out there, how much is available, but then to understand food insecurity, mm-hmm. which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit. But that whole kind of educational component, you can't do that any other way. And once they know it, it's like, oh. Wow. And so having people wanting to do it on their own is just ideal. That's really our dream.
Yeah. That's the inspiration, right? It's we want to spread what our work and see it grow.
We call it spreading the gospel of glean.
Yes, exactly. That's amazing. And so I also would love to learn a little bit about, for our listeners to learn a little bit about other programs you guys have going on. Cause I know that I see you guys pop up at places like Jimbo's and One Kitchen Collaborative. Yeah. And I see these, or maybe even I feel like a gelato place I might've seen.
I'm glad you're following our socials.
I know. So honestly, it's just me being at these places and seeing it and being
oh, that's so great.
So it makes me so happy. But yeah, I see so much going on.
Yeah.
So
we do have a lot. So basically, as I said, our definition is we are a food recovery nonprofit, and we only work with fruits and vegetables. So mm-hmm. It's no refrigeration. It's not prepared food. We're just in the produce, you know, mm-hmm. area. And what's happened is that first, you know, the first, as I mentioned, the first program, which I started so many years ago, we called it Crop Swap. And mm-hmm. that is the gleaning backyard. We call it backyard gleaning, even though some backyards are like 300 trees.
Sure.
But backyard gleaning, and that has been going on strong for all of this time. And that used to account for like 75% of all of our, whatever we were able to glean. We then were able to, through actually the Food System Alliance connections and a very, very generous benefactor, to launch our market share program, which was in 2017 was the first year. And what we ended up doing, and I maybe your listeners will be interested to know this, but you know, I'm sure a lot of them go to farmers markets. Mm-hmm. And they're so cool. Oh, and yeah. We all love them so much. But did you know that when they're done with the market, a lot of them toss it. Mm-hmm. Some of them are able to feed their animals or do composting. But when we did a survey, when we were first starting to do this program, we found out from the farmers that they just can't bring it back. So we mm-hmm. work at right now three Sunday markets, Hillcrest, Leucadia, and La Jolla every Sunday. And we do it Sundays because that is their last day of market. Mm-hmm. And they can't, you know, it's beautiful on Sunday, but it's not going to last till next Thursday or whenever their next one is. So it's the perfect time to be able to collect that. And we're able to surprisingly get thousands of pounds from those markets, you know, a week, which shocks a lot of people.
Yeah, that is really good information, because as somebody that frequents, and I think a lot of our listeners frequent farmers markets, that is pretty shocking to hear,
I know.
And I don't think I would have thought about it, except that I go to the Leucadia market every Sunday and started to see you guys afterwards and was like, a light bulb, you know,
right,
went off.
You
and
see
I was just
that
like,
we have just crates and crates and crates of this gorgeous stuff. And the thing that makes us one of the many things that differentiate us from like the food banks is we are not a food bank. We don't hold anything. Mm-hmm. So we're transporters. We're going from the source, taking it to the need. So we are getting the produce and then we're taking it to the place that's going to distribute it.
Right.
And so that said, the reason why we work so well is because the farmer's market, at the end of that market, we are loading it up to whoever our partners are, or sometimes our own vehicles, and taking that to one of our over 70 feeding partners. And that will be distributed or used that day. And some of them, like Kitchens for Good or One Kitchen Collaborative, they have kitchens so they can actually process it. And that's a whole other thing. But that's really exciting.
In this series, we are talking to local sustainable business owners and organizations to highlight tangible resources within our community. Are you a local sustainable business, or do you know someone we should be talking to? Email us at sustainabilityissexythepodcast@gmail.com.
Our latest endeavor, which has been super exciting, is I'm working with Jimbo's. As you know, they're a local market. They have 4 locations, and we work at 3 of them. And what is ending up happening, and it's also surprising, because as much as you didn't know that like a farmer's market has excess, Jimbo's, they do donate a lot, like to the food banks, like twice a week, but they even have more. And how we ended up getting into it, and I think this is one of our sort of niche strengths, because we're very community-minded, we're very nimble, and we're very specific. And so we go in twice a week, let's say to Carlsbad, Jimbo's, going in, and let's just say there's a celery stock, two, three celery stocks are off, perfectly good, but they can't sell it, right?
Yeah.
So this is exactly what we're doing. We're going through, we're sorting all the stuff that is good, but maybe not good enough for the store. And and then we literally are also going through, let's just say, for example, a netted bag of tangerines. There's 12 tangerines. One of them is rotten. Mm-hmm. Now, in a food bank situation, they're just tossing tossing it into hopefully composter. But we're going in and taking the bad one out and putting all the 11 more in our box and then taking it to, our partners.
I love that, because I was just thinking, it's something like you and I had talked about before we pressed record, is that we need people attacking this from every angle.
Exactly.
And we have these pieces in place, like the food banks, for example, that have been a part of our and every community for a very long time. And they have processes and systems and are doing such amazing work. But there's still so much food that's falling through the cracks for various reasons. And you guys are able to kind of fill one of those gaps, which is so exciting.
And we do, the thing about the food banks too, is that, they are using a kind of a traditional sort of a hub and spoke model.
Yep.
And we are using a point to point model. So their whole premise is that people basically need to come to this giant place to get the excess food, which, as we now know, many people are not able to do that for many, many reasons. And the reason that poverty continues and food insecurity continues is that people are not getting access to good food who need it. Mm-hmm. And so these food deserts that exist, we need to go to them. And that's what we do. So that's where, again, another one of our strengths that really differentiates us is that we actually do this pretty logistically complicated work. And, I think that if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. So we know now why no one else is doing this, but basically taking it to those who need it, like where they're at. And so that is really a difference.
Yeah.
And it is the way that we have to attack this. It has to be community by community, and everyone's got to be in, like all in.
Yes. Yeah. So earlier I heard you mention the word sustainability, but in regards to funding, right?
Oh,
like
yes,
making
yes.
something sustainable. So I'd love to hear from you what the word sustainability means to you, because I think there are so many definitions and it can mean, different things to different people. So what does sustainability mean to you?
Well, I would say before I started the nonprofit or started out work on it, I would have had more of a traditional definition, but because we struggle, as many nonprofits do to figure out how do we keep our mission alive? Mm-hmm. How do we keep going? And there are a lot of roadblocks, especially for those dealing in food, which mm-hmm. is a really big problem for us because if you work for, the Goodwill, you get all the donations and then you can resell them mm-hmm. and you can't do that with food.
Right.
That's a huge problem. So we have worked around many different ways to understand how we can, as an organization, be sustainable. And I think that for us, maybe what I would say is a definition is really understanding kind of the bigger picture of, you know, not just like what it's like today, like how do I grow today or how do I, it's like how does the system, how does everything gets, you know, established so that we know that it's going to keep going. Mm-hmm. And as a founder, it's a really important question that I ask myself all the time, because I'm not going to be here forever. And this is like my baby. And it's like, it's really hard to think of, you know, it going away after all of the work that we put in. So again, mm-hmm. that's what I would say. I would look at sustainability as being the way to understand how you truly can stay and grow and be sustainable.
Yes. And that's exactly what I was hoping to hear, because I think for me as well, my definition has evolved and grown so much since I've become involved with, you know, my own organization, and trying
and it's
to
in your name.
Yes. Right. It's sustainability obviously has like that traditional, traditional definition when we talk about it on the kind of subject matter of this podcast and all of that, but it also encompasses so many different parts of our lives on a personal level and on a professional level.
Right.
So yeah, that was exactly kind of mirrored the development of my definition as well. So I'd love for you to share with us how the community can be involved. And I mean that from both sides, because we see that there's an opportunity for food generators as well as an opportunity for community members to become involved.
Oh, absolutely. So we call all of those parts, you know, our community orchard. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, the three parts are basically, you know, the source, the power and the recipient, you know, of each of our sort of endeavors. So if you have trees or you know someone who has trees, mm-hmm. citrus trees, get in contact with us. It's producegood.org. We have a nice little form on our website that you can fill out as a grower, and mm-hmm. we will contact you and try to schedule a pick if we can. We call them picks. Also, if you are interested, if you just want to volunteer your time, mm-hmm. We love our volunteers. We have a very active volunteer base, but we're always looking for more folks. And again, as we go into more different areas, we're really hoping that we can draw people local mm-hmm. from that area. I mean, our volunteers are so wonderful. A lot of them drive very far to go okay. to events, and it'd be great to be able to get more volunteers that were actually nearby, and it would be their thing, right?
Yeah.
So, and then of course, money.
Yep.
We're not going to forget money. Money is helping, you know, helping all nonprofits, you know, to stay alive and be sustainable. But we welcome donations. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do that for us as well. It does keep us going, and we do have other sources, lots of individuals and government agencies and all that. But it never ends.
So this is something I ask all of my guests, and this does not necessarily have to do with Produce Good. You can answer this from whatever angle you'd like. But do you personally have a favorite sustainable product or sustainable practice that you'd like to share with our listeners?
So Liz, I'm going to just first preface this with the fact that going back on my whole thing about not getting despairing over mm. the state of the world and my inability to solve everything, I have this mantra that I say all the time is just pick your guilt, because I simply can't do all the things. Mm-hmm. I can't do all the sustainable practices. I cannot. So that said, the thing that I have really embraced, well, I have really tried to cut my own personal, you know, only buying what I need or what I think I need. Mm-hmm. I'm getting much better at that. But I also am a huge fan of freezing things. So that is new for me. And so, you know, making whatever and then freezing it. And then honestly, it's like, then my future self is so happy. They're like, oh, thank you, Past Nita. You just made me some soup. But the idea of freezing, and also because I have a lot of access to a lot of citrus, mm-hmm. and you simply cannot eat citrus, you know,
that much.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful thing to juice and freeze. It's like fantastic. So I mean, I know this is a little bit simplistic, but that is one thing I do all the time. And I'm a really big fan of freezing.
I think that it's something we forget about.
That's what I mean.
I think for me, like before I kind of got into that practice as well, I sort of saw the freezer as somewhere for things that were came frozen that I would put in there.
Exactly.
And sometimes things would get lost in the freezer, right? And you clean out your freezer and you have no idea what it is.
It's like, ooh.
Yeah. But at least from a, like a residential freezer perspective, unlike an industrial freezer, ours are meant for like extending the life of something that we made. It's not meant for long term.
Right.
You know, it's not a deep freeze. It doesn't have the same temperature levels. It's perfect for making something that you plan to then go back to, you know, within 6 months or,
if you didn't plan it and you're like,
made too much and you don't want it to go to waste. So using the freezer, you know, creatively too, like for things like herbs or like fruit juices, like you just said.
And you can also, do you know the little trick about, I mean, this is kind of funny, a little Halloween hint thing, but, you putting them in ice cubes.
Yeah, the herbs with water and then
the orange juice or whatever.
And
you can just use it for a drink for summer. It's really great.
Yeah, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it seems really creative it's just like trying to, you know, prevent food waste.
Oh, look at how elegant I am.
Yeah. Oh, I have juice cubes. So freezer, that's such a great tip. And then pick your guilt. I'm really going to take that because it's something that I think is going to be really helpful for me because I so often feel helpless because I can't affect change in every industry at every level. And what we're doing, for example, with Sustainability is Sexy is focusing so much at a local level, which on a global scale is not going to make the impact that we need as a species. But I see the changes that it's making. I see the changes that other organizations like Produce Good and all this amazing network that we have here. And it's those things that I have to focus on and hold on to and pick my guilt so that I, you know, that it doesn't drag me down. I think that's a really great suggestion.
It helps me a lot because we can't do everything.
Yeah.
But we can do one thing. Even more than one thing.
Yeah. We do what we can. That's what I always say.
Exactly.
As long as you're doing what you can, like that's going to make sure that I feel okay about it and it's going to make an impact, which is amazing. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't know if there's anything really specific. I would just encourage folks to walk their neighborhood, look around, look at the trees, look at what's going on. There's just so much that you can do yourself or with your neighbors. Like you said, maybe one person can do it, but you see, organize, you know, a neighborhood pick, go around to meet your neighbors. I mean, that's a kind of a great thing, right? A lot of people don't even know who their neighbors are, but because we live in this unbelievably fruitful region, it's just, you know, for us, we know how much we did a little extrapolation a couple of years ago on how much we're not getting and just, and we have about 800 farmers on our list, or growers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's growing all the time. And even from that group, and that was actually when there were 600 of them, we did an extrapolation of how much fruit we're not getting. And it was 15 million pounds.
Oh.
I know. Talk about guilt. It's like, oh my gosh. So just the idea of how much is out there and how much we can do. And it's not that hard. It's like in a yard. You know, it's like, you know, the answer, one of the answers to hunger is, you know, in your backyard.
Yeah.
And I do want to say a couple more things I actually remember that I do like to say with any time I talk about our thing, because when people are growers and they have, you know, beautiful big orchards, they're very worried about liability. A lot of them don't know about the Good Samaritan Act, which is a federal and a state act that, you know, protects a donor that's giving food in good faith from, you know, from liability. And that's a really important thing to know. Additionally, if you are a grower or a farmer and you do donate to us, we do give you a tax donation receipt at the end of the year. So you are getting credit for that, which you have donated. So those are the two things that I always want to make sure that people really understand. And just really the twin statistics that we deal with every day, which is 1 in 4 San Diegans is food insecure, while we waste 40% of all the food that we have. So just trying to close that gap, mitigate that a little is, you know, if people even just did one thing, I think, you know, it would probably maybe move the needle slightly if we all just, you know, went out and picked some fruit.
Yeah, it absolutely would. Yes, yes. And, you know, outside of gleaning, there are obviously so many small changes you can make in your personal life to ensure that you're trying to not waste food. And, you know, we've had a couple of past episodes from different organizations that gave some really amazing suggestions. So highly recommend going back and listening to some of our food waste, you know, focused episodes for any tips and tricks. And you can always reach out to SIS or Produce Good or any of the amazing organizations focused on the sustainability of our food system here in San Diego, just chock full of tips and ideas. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today, Nita. This has been amazing to speak with you and to learn more about yourself and your organization. So thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure and honor. Thank you, Liz.
You can learn more about Produce Good on Instagram at Produce Good and online at www.producegood.org. As always, all of the resources and brands mentioned on today's podcast will be linked for your reference. And until next time, I'm Liz Murphy, sending you sustainability love from San Diego.
Sustainability is Sexy is a nonprofit organization located in San Diego, California, focused on inspiring and driving innovation within our community to create real change. Learn more at sustainabilityissexy.org and find out how you can be involved.